everyone, and welcome back to the Polaris Podcast, brought to you by the Polaris Help Center. I'm your host, Bob Vachon, and I'm no expert, but I'm joined by one today. Choosing the right gear to wear while snowmobiling or snow biking might seem like an easy task. However, choosing the wrong equipment can quickly turn a good ride into a bad one. That's why we've enlisted the help of David McKinney from our friends over at 509 to help give some direction on how we should dress based on our riding style and the conditions we ride in. He's also going to give some callouts to pieces in the 509 lineup to ensure we're comfortable all season long. Great. Well, sitting down with me today from 509 is David McKinney. He's here to talk to us about what to wear during snowmobile season, how to dress properly depending on your conditions. David, thanks so much for taking the trip out here and sitting down with us.
No problem. It's fun to be back. I'm originally Minnesota boy, so it's fun to get back to this neck of the woods occasionally.
Yeah, awesome. Well, we've had a little introduction here, but our audience, you're probably brand new to them unless they listen to your podcast. So if you wouldn't mind giving yourself a quick introduction and what keeps you busy at 509?
Yeah, I mean, loaded question, loaded answer, a little bit of everything. I've done the media side of the brand since 2014 or so. So shot five of the 509 films, and now our YouTube series, and then host our podcast. And on top of that, manage our pro team of athletes and a variety of other things that overlap from social media to ads, photo, video work, a little bit of everything. So it's a tough question to answer.
Yeah. But
yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, definitely immersed in the company, we can say that, and yeah. Probably an expert on the product, so great to have you here. Jumping into the topic, we want to go through kind of a buyer's guide, if you will, for, let's say, someone who's new to the sport. They're looking to buy new clothing, for riding, and, from my experience in the past, the product has changed even from then. So why don't we start off with just some basics? What do I need to know about myself, my riding style, to know what to look for to even buy? Where do I begin?
Yeah. Obviously we have so many different disciplines within this industry. Mm-hmm. We have the trail riders in the Midwest, East Coast, the Northern Territories of Canada. Then we have the mountain riders in the West. But we also are in this unique position where you have guys in the Midwest that travel West and don't want to buy more than one gear set, which is understandable in a sport that's already pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously start with what type of riding do you want to do? The trail guy, for example, we have a series called the R200, which is a removable liner, pant, and bib. The cool thing about that is it's a great option for the guy that wants one gear set. If you want to head west or you're still riding the march here in the springtime and the temperatures start warming up, you can remove the liner. And the days when it gets bitterly cold, we have numerous liner options to zip in. A 200 gram insulation, a 300 gram insulation, so you can really amplify the warmth on that. And we also, as of last year, I believe, have a heated liner option.
Cool.
So within that one jacket, you have three different liner options to really hone in on, what temperature you're going to be riding the most.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, you go west, you can take that liner out and have a shell. Same thing for the pant. The pant just has the one 200 gram insulation pant, hence R200.
Sure.
And it's just the best, I'd say, combo package for the guy that's not too sure if he's going to get cold, warm, and you have all these other options throughout the accessory side of that jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And then budget plays such a big role.
Right.
It's really hard to tell. Everybody's head is shaped different,
yep.
Of course. So, unfortunately, maybe the cheaper helmet doesn't fit you. But I tell people to never skimp out on head safety. We have the Altitude 2.0, which is going to be your open-face helmet that you run goggles in. And that comes in a poly, and then it comes in a carbon version as well. That guy's going to run you, anywhere from that 250 up to 400 range, depending on if you want the carbon with all the features and, top of the line. But then the Tactical 2.0 helmet is that kind of lower price point, still DOT, ECE, every safety spec.
Mm-hmm.
All these helmets, I think people worry sometimes about price point and safety.
Yeah.
Which it can play a role very, very minor. When you start getting into MIPS protection in helmets, that's really... there's not much further you can expand on from there. We all have to pass the exact same safety ratings, DOT, ECE. They all have to pass that with flying colors to be eligible to wear in your head. So a Tactical 2.0, lower price point helmet, just as safe. Great helmet coming in around, oh boy, you're going to quiz me here. I want to say 129. Open face with goggles. A great option for, you know, it's kind of a little bit more youthful colors. We add a lot more of those color pops in that helmet. Just the price point makes sense. You know, your 16-year-old kid getting the sport can afford it, and he can look cool. The cool thing about that is we added this last year this V system, which is essentially a built-in balaclava.
Okay.
So if you want to wear a full-face helmet and goggles, you don't want to wear a shielded helmet. We know looks play a big role nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
And we know wearing a full-face helmet in the Midwest East Coast can be darn cold sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So we built in this balaclava, essentially, that seals around your face, leaving your eye port open, so you have a perfect seal with your goggles. It just works great. There's no other way to put it. You don't have to battle a balaclava. You can still layer with one for extra neck warmth, etc. But no more of the days of having the leaking air coming through your goggles and you getting the tears in your eyes. So that's just an awesome bang for the buck
mm-hmm.
for the guy that wants to wear the full face helmet and still be warm enough on the trail.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just evaluate your riding style. Mm-hmm. Number one, for example, a lot of these sites, including ours, has options for what type of rider are you: trail, mountain, crossover, and that'll filter down to gear that is specified for that discipline of riding. So mm-hmm. first and foremost, yeah, dial in what type of rider you are, and then you can start choosing what matches you the best from there.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great, especially that the website has that area, like you said, for you're going to travel, if you're going to stick to riding in the Midwest, that's good to know. So what are some things that kind of span all disciplines, like talking about layering, where do I start? We hear it, you go online, how to address snowmobiling, cold weather, whatever it is, layering is probably the number one thing that comes up. So what should we know about layering? There's a number of base layers that every manufacturer has. How do I know which one's best for me? Where do I even start to wrap my hand around that concept?
Number one, no cotton.
Sure.
I chuckle to myself every time I see a cotton sweatshirt hood dangling out of the back of a jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Cotton does not breathe. It does not dry out. It might feel warm and cozy at the time. The second it gets damp, you are going to turn into a ice block.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's so many different ratings for layering. And these sites, thankfully, make it pretty easy to understand that, hey, this is going to be, for example, ours are level one, level two.
Sure.
Level one is on the lighter weight. My personal go-to is merino wool. Merino wool wicks moisture very, very well. It breathes and holds in heat when it feels that your torso is cool, and it lets heat out when it feels that you are warm.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stink either. That's a huge plus.
Yep.
You can wear merino wool, I'm not advising you do, for 10 days, and it still smells okay.
Yep, done that.
Yes. So a merino pant and top are my go-to. And then on top of that, you can double it up with like a level two layering, which for us, for example, is a fleece zip up, a quarter zip.
Okay.
That's going to be more your 20 degree and lower days of trail riding.
Mm-hmm.
The Western guys, I get away with a merino wool level one all day long, top and bottom.
Sure.
We're moving around quite a bit more. We're digging sleds out, a lot of stop and go, sweating. But yeah, as you move into these Eastern states, going up to a level two, combining that with, we also have like a sin loft, which is a blown in synthetic down jacket. The cool thing about something like a sin loft is there's so many options now. We have a vest version, we have a long sleeve. So if you're like, your torso's cold, but you feel your arms are usually fine, you can get the vest and it's very stowable. Roll it up, throw it in your sled, throw it in your backpack. Yeah, that would be my biggest thing, is make sure you get a base layer that is easily removable and stowable, because we can't predict the future of the day. It might swing 15 degrees. You might start playing around in a meadow and having more fun than you thought and start getting warm. And the second you get warm, you're burning energy. And having like a removable sin loft that's very stowable is a great go-to to have in the pack. Light, does not take up a lot of space.
Sure.
And is efficient.
Awesome. Great. So thanks for touching on that. I think that can be a topic that is simple enough, but yet a lot of people don't understand it properly, what to wear under that jacket. I know back from some previous sales experience, a lot of people thought, hey, let me go buy that most heavy jacket and I'm good to go. But right. Yeah, that's not the way. So talking about those outer layers or the base layers, jumping into a mid layer, you touched on some. Are there any other considerations for the mid layer underneath that outer shell that we're wearing?
Yeah, breathability always, and a lot of the stuff is designed for breathability. It's always a battle getting comfortable for the Midwest East Coast environment. I mean, the reality is we are snowmobilers, and we're nuts sometimes, and we'll go out when it's 10, 20 below. So, for example, in our line, we've added the Ignite series in a lot of things, which is heated versions. We have that Sinloft down in a heated version as well, which has a battery pack that's built into it, 12-volt charging. And that, it's hard to go wrong if you get very, very cold. That is an, if you're still cold, then you should probably look into a different sport, to be honest,
because sure.
It has three different temperature settings.
Mm-hmm.
So you can really dial in. If you're frigid, crank it all the way up to, I believe it comes in at 109 degrees. So you're good and toasty. And then that R200 jacket I mentioned earlier has a heated liner option as well. So there's so many things to take into the equation, but, making sure you're breathing as well. The second that moisture's not coming out of you, it's a day ender.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Well, again, thanks for breaking that down. Now, we kind of touched on it very close in the beginning of identify what type of rider you are to kind of point yourself to which area in whatever manufacturer's lineup you're looking at. Can we kind of discuss more? I mean, there's tons of jackets, tons of bib options, mono suits. Like you said, this is a very segmented market now.
Yes, as
our snowmobiles are, so is the gear. Kind of discuss to me that active rider. What is, like you specifically out west, our snow bikers, our mountain riders, what is a good kind of go-to option that you guys have in your lineup that you kind of point people to, or any new notable products that you want to talk about?
Yeah, the Western world is definitely where my heart is. I'm the most confident in what my go-to gear set is. Stretch and breathability and waterproofing, of course. We have a line called the Stoke. It's a 10K, 10K, three-way stretch. The nice thing about having the stretch is we are constantly coming into tree branches and having sudden impacts, whether you're unfortunately falling off the snowmobile, catching handlebars, a pine bough to the torso. It happens.
Right.
And having that stretch is going to allow some give in the material before tearing. So we've implemented stretch in a lot of our mountain riding applications for those high impact scenarios to save the material from tearing.
Yeah.
And then waterproofing. We're in all kinds of different scenarios. We push it late to May. It's wet. It's mashed potato snow. And December, it's blower powder. You have ice buildup on you. So having a good waterproof rating can really make or break your day.
Yeah.
Our top line ether is Sympatex, which is a 20K, 40K, awesome waterproof breathability rating. And Sympatex is an incredible, incredible material that is very, very abrasion resistant. And definitely for the higher end guy that is just constantly in the trees, constantly bashing, doesn't want anything to do with the open meadows, just hard, hard riding. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, putting all those elements together is going to make for a comfortable day. But then the other thing that I really want to hit on is boots.
Yeah.
Is having a dry and well-supported foot. Dual BOAs, awesome. The BOA system is just a ratcheting system, and it's essentially putting a ratchet strap around your leg until you're comfortable. Having that, ankle support, everything in those high impact scenarios, or slipping off a running board, not rolling an ankle, that combined with the insulation. I mean, I will never go back to a lace boot. I think the dual BOA should be everybody's go-to just for all day comfort and security. So there's so many things that play into the Western market that once you start breaking it down and thinking about all of our impact points and what we're putting our bodies through, and our constant temperature changes from, you can be riding really, really hard for 30 minutes, then you can be standing around cooking lunch around a fire for 20, and your body temperature's constantly changing there. Yep. So it's a lot of different factors.
Yeah, for sure. So you touched on footwear, but before we dive into that subject, I want to kind of back it up to the waterproofing and that each brand out there, whether it's Impitex or Gore-Tex or 3M materials out there, they all have those. So if I'm new to the sport, new to waterproofing, I'm going to see those numbers, 4K, 4K, 2K, 2K. What on earth does that mean? Is one better than the other? How do I decipher that as a person to see if that's going to work for me?
So the rating of waterproofing, like 20K, comes from essentially putting a hose on a 1-inch by 1-inch square, and then in millimeters, a rating until it starts leaking through. So the higher, 10K versus 20K. 20K can support more force of water penetration before coming through. So once you get above that 10K number, to be honest, it's going to be hard for the average guy to notice the difference. 10K is kind of the industry standard now.
Sure.
And in most applications works really well. If you are the guy that is pushing it through all different scenarios, it might be 33 degrees and you're still riding and it's kind of a rain-snow mix.
Mm-hmm.
That 20K will come into play for you.
Sure.
But if you're seeing something with 10K and comparing it to 20K, I wouldn't have that be your sole reason to shy away from it.
Sure.
10K is very, very proven, and I would confidently say 90% of the time you're going to be comfortable in a 10K suit.
Mm-hmm. Good to know. So we talked about the active rider. You mentioned kind of the cross trail rider in the beginning, and we touched on that. What about our riders in extreme cold? Kind of speaking specifically to the Midwest trail riders that are just going to go out, sit, do long hours on the machine. Obviously layering is going to factor in there, but what are the considerations that I should be thinking of when layering up for a really cold, long day on the sled where I'm not active like you guys in the mountains?
Insulation rating is huge. That's going to determine how much you have to layer outside of that. A lot of the time when you're looking at a insulated, quote-unquote insulated jacket, that only means so much until you read into the actual gram rating of the insulation. 200 grams is kind of the standard to start at for an insulated jacket where you're going to be comfortable in most conditions. That can go all the way up to 400 grams. When you get to 400 grams, you're starting to be a bit bulky. That's a big jacket, which is, if you're okay with that, you're going to be warm as well. 200 gram jacket with a level 1 base layer, level 2 base layer is going to be more than adequate for those really cold days. But combining that with a good glove, we strategically, in our range glove, for example, have more insulation on the back of the hand than the palm, as you can over-insulate. If you're looking into gloves, make sure you see if they have a palm rating and the back of the hand rating for gram insulation. If you over-insulate in the palm, it can actually work against you and not allow heat to come in from, say, heated handlebars. You can have so much there, it's too thick, and you're frigid. But having that higher gram rating on the back of the palm, in the back of the hand, is really what you want to see for wind reduction, retaining that heat in your hand coming off of your heated handlebar. And then a shielded helmet, of course. You can get away with the goggles, as we spoke on before. There's options out there. But if your sole purpose is 300 miles a day, going from little motel to motel, a shielded helmet, our Delta R4 and our new Delta V are both shielded options that our Ignite line carries into, which is a heated shield then. Our heated shield tethers right into your sled. Almost all sleds nowadays have an accessory outlet, and it's plug and play. It's constant power. It's always on. It's crystal clear vision, no matter how much snow dust is in front of you or how heavy you're breathing. That is, I believe, your make or break in how your ride goes. Yeah. Vision is everything.
Absolutely.
So combining all of those factors together would be my go-tos to check out before purchasing any gear for trail riding in those extreme cold temperatures.
Awesome. Yeah, good. Thanks for breaking that down. I think a lot of people can get a little overloaded with information, especially when it comes to all these numbers we just spoke about the breathability, the aspect, mm-hmm. the waterproofing, and the weights of the insulation on there. So that's great. Jumping back, we started talking about boots, and you mentioned gloves here. Let's dive into boots a little bit more. you know, myself, I can talk, I get cold feet super quick, and I can never figure that out no matter what type of layering I do on my feet. So let's talk about the lineup and kind of what do you guys have? What do you recommend for someone who, A, active guy, the crossover guy, and then again, the cold person that we talked about just before?
Right. So we have three boots, two of which share the same model in a different configuration.
Okay.
The Raid Boa boot. It comes in a single and a dual. The single boa is just on the top, which will cinch around kind of the shin area. And the dual boa has a ankle support cinch as well as around the shin area. Both of those share the same 200 grams of insulation. Their boots are kind of a tough one to gauge on what customer it's for, because you know, he can only make so many boot variations.
Exactly.
So that then comes down to what sock you're wearing. And we do two different weighted wool socks for the Western rider or the guy that's Midwest. It just runs a little warmer. And making sure you have a good wool sock. A tall wool sock goes a long way as well. Making sure that sock comes above the boot. And you're losing heat all the way up to your knees there. So making sure that sock continues all the way up to keep you comfy all day. And then as far as the use of the boa, you can get away with the single boa in at most trail applications. You don't need to have that extra ankle support there. You're not getting as wild and doing hopovers and jumping from running board to running board. The Western guy, dual boa all day. Great additional support. And then finally, we have the Velo-Raid boot, which is our hybrid boot. It's very moto-inspired if you look at it.
Okay.
It's a buckle system. A narrow profile, reinforcements on the inside for just high abrasion points. The original intent was thinking of the snow biker. So it's a great boot for snow bikers. But then the sledders realized this is a pretty cool boot also. The narrower profile is awesome with today's narrower running boards. Sure. You feel like you have more of a footing on the boards. It is only 100 gram insulation. So if you are a guy that runs cold or you're standing around a lot, maybe layering up with a thicker wool sock is going to be your best bet, or just going to a dual boa raid boot would be your next option. But they're both great in the right application. Definitely would say the Velo-Raid is Western mountain market only. But the dual boas are hard to go wrong with in no matter what territory you're riding in.
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds like a great versatile option, and I think I purchased some last year and didn't get to use them, so excited about that.
You got to get out in the sled more.
I know it. So the last thing that we really kind of haven't touched on are gloves and then helmets. You mentioned quite a bit about the gloves with the Ignite series for our cold Midwestern climate riders. Mm-hmm. What else is the consideration there? Obviously, we're going to kind of go through the same thing. Our active riders who are sweating, working it up, versus everyone in between.
Yeah.
What should I consider there?
There's a lot of great glove variations. I think one of our favorite things to play with and test is gloves. I love trying different gloves in every different application. The trail rider guy, gauntlet versus no gauntlet. Big difference. As you know, you're going fast down the trail. If you don't have a gauntlet glove or you don't have it Velcroed around, you get a wind tunnel coming up your sleeve. And that can be a real bummer.
Right.
And then that combined with, like we talked about before, insulation rating and trying to have two gloves in your pack.
Okay.
A middleweight and a heavyweight is my go-to all the time. Making sure you have something for temperatures plummet, and you'd rather be too warm than too cold. But the flip of that is it's sunny and 30-degree day, and you're sweating, and you got to cool down one way or another, and having that midweight glove along with you through the daylight hours potentially. But the gauntlet versus no gauntlet also, it's great to have. I'd prefer, it makes more sense in my eyes, to match the heavyweight with a gauntlet, being that the odds that you're wearing the heavyweight, it's already cold in the first place. So having that gauntlet sealing up the cuff is really, really awesome and just a comfortable ride experience. And then moving to the West, we actually, believe it or not, it sounds crazy to everybody in the Midwest, run a lot of totally uninsulated gloves. We have a glove called the Stoke glove that is in line with our Stoke line of outerwear that I spoke on earlier. just high tech, really tech orientated.
Sure.
It's actually a merino wool lined glove. There's no insulation, there's no bladder or anything. So the idea there is the way merino wicks moisture is you can soak that glove out. It can get wet, but it's going to release that moisture. The people get caught up a lot in looking at the waterproofing in a glove. If you tear a glove apart, there's a bladder running through that whole glove. Once moisture's in there, it's not going anywhere out. It's basically trapped in a plastic bag. So the merino wool is this cool hybrid glove that's actually going to release that moisture. It's not being held in by the insulation layer, by the waterproofing layer. So that's an awesome, awesome technical glove. It's a goat leather palm. It's so much grip. It's you're not going to slip off the handlebars. Very lightweight. You don't feel restricted in it at all, form fitting. And then on the same note of the mountain market, we have the free ride glove, which is a semi-insulated, waterproof, 100-gram insulation glove that's still lightweight enough to feel like you have a good grasp on the handlebars, good control in those technical scenarios, but a great glove to ride the trail in and trail out. We get cold a lot riding in the morning and out. You've been working all day. Your heart rate's up. You may have, you know, got super sweaty or got your other gloves wet, and you want a nice, comfy, warm pair of gloves to ride back to the truck that aren't going to restrict your riding. So the free ride is a great middle ground mountain rider glove that's not going to be restricting and overly warm.
Awesome. Definitely a ton of options in the 509 lineup.
Yeah, you're getting the gears turning for me.
Yeah, some great ones indeed. I think just to kind of start to wrap it up, we talked all about our body. You mentioned we touched on helmets a little bit, but that's kind of a whole beast in itself. Kind of just run us through the different styles of helmets that are in the 509 lineup and kind of who their correct rider, air quotes, if you will, might be, and you know, some considerations for someone who A, gets cold a lot or sweats a lot, how to manage those type of things and what helmet style that might lend.
Right. There's really two helmet styles and then different subcategories within them. So there's open-faced and closed-face, a shielded helmet. You can get away with both of them depending on, you know, where you're living and what type of ride you want to do. There's a lot of people that ride trail that run an open-face with goggles and pair it with the correct goggle. And this is a whole can of worms of options.
Right.
For example, our Tactical 2.0 that I hit on earlier, the kind of entry-level, not crazy tech pack, but really affordable helmet, great option, has the built-in balaclava option, removable. So there, within that helmet, there's another variation available right there. You can have it for those cold days and you want it sealed up around the face. Springtime, you can take that out and wear whatever goggle you want with it. And on top of that, I mean, you can just keep layering this. We have heated goggles. The Ignite goggles, so you get the benefit of a heated shield option and clear vision, but you're able to then change out what color tint you want. What, if you want a photochromatic, a transition lens, that goes from clear to smoke as the sun comes out, and you could have one goggle lens for all day. And,
yeah.
And so you have so many different options to build upon here. And then our premier open-face helmet, the Altitude 2.0. We're super proud of that helmet. It was built from the ground up. Clay models, the whole thing. Really cool seeing the developmental stages of that. Within that helmet, there's all these different variations of it. There's carbon, non-carbon, high flow, which has bigger vent ports.
Mm-hmm.
For the Western guy, that's always running warm. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to unpack it as efficient as possible.
Right.
It's a good problem to have. There's a lot of options. It's just understanding exactly what they all mean. And then the 100% trail, 300 plus mile guy, the full face, Delta R4, Delta V, which is the new version of that helmet. That's its own new shell now, new venting system, new integrated tail light in the back of the helmet. Just all these awesome safety features for the trail rider. You know, the heated shield is just a home run. You can't leave on a long day without having a heated shield. So there's just so many options, which is a great problem to have. And how you filter that through a website can really make it a lot easier to digest. But There's so many different goggle shapes. It's really one of those things you have to figure out exactly what type of riding you're going to do the majority of the time and what fits your head the best and your face. We're fortunate to have three different Premier goggle frames. Four now, actually, sorry. And some that work for over the glasses, even. If you wear glasses, we have the Aviator 2.0, which has, quote, OTG capabilities over the glasses. There's actual cutouts in the foam to recess the foam back into the frame for your goggle or your glasses to fit in there comfortably. So there's so many ways to customize your fit and comfort level, and it's just really, you got to get in there, you got to try it on, you got to visit the dealer. You know, we are all guilty of impulse buys, but I highly encourage people, I mean, support your local dealers. These are the people that make this possible in this industry to keep thriving, and it's fun going in there and trying things on and finding the perfect combination for what your needs are.
Yeah, definitely. And I think kind of just to unpack what I heard from you is really lean on that dealership who has the experience. They're most likely riders, mm-hmm. just like you and I. There is no official one-size-fits-all helmet
exactly.
solution. So really get out there, like you said, try it on, figure out what fits your head shape, and from there you can start making those decisions. One thing I kind of also want to touch on, that poly mm-hmm. helmets.
Poly, fiberglass,
yep.
varies as well.
What are some considerations in those? We see carbon fiber, we think, cool, you see the weave, it's fancy, it's flashy. What about the helmet weights? How can that impact my ride over a day or a week or something like that?
Definitely. I'll start on the mountain side. There's not, you compare mountain to trail, there's a lot more technology and features packed into a trail helmet. They're just necessary.
Sure.
The shield adds weight. There might be a flip-down sun visor that's built into it that adds weight. The vent ports, the overall size of the helmet. So it's very nice in the trail application to shave some weight in that carbon. In the mountain application, we're moving our heads all day, everywhere. We might have a 40-pound Avi pack on. So eliminating any strain on your neck can really prolong your day and your overall comfort. If it's in the cards and in the wallet, I highly advise going towards the carbon. You don't realize how light and nice a carbon is until you spend a whole day in one. Hey, your head's on a swivel and you feel feather light. It's a massive difference. It's a few hundred gram difference, actually, which sounds, you know, pretty small.
Yep.
Until you even another prime example, going to a dealer, holding them side by side in your hand, you will feel that difference. Safety ratings are the exact same. Passes everything with flying colors. Carbon's strong and light. And yeah, it does look cool, but for overall comfort, I would push you towards the carbon if it's in the cards. But even the poly and fiberglass nowadays have been able to cut quite a bit of weight. They are comparable to carbons from 10 years ago now, the weight of a non-carbon helmet. So they're still great, great helmets. Just your overall fatigue at the end of the day of a carbon, though, is much lesser.
Yeah, awesome. Just another consideration to throw into the mix.
There's a lot of things to evaluate.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. So I think we nailed pretty much everything. Are there any other special call-outs? I know one thing that kind of has popped up over the years are mono suits.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of speak to a mono suit versus a jacket-bib combo, jacket-pant combo that, you know, most of us might be mm-hmm. used to?
Yeah, I'm a mono suit. It's definitely a Western thing primarily.
Sure.
There are people in the Midwest. We do offer an insulated mono suit. The tough part in trail applications is you're going in and out of places, whether you're stopping for lunch, dinner somewhere. It's not the easiest thing to take off trail riding. You can tie it around your waist, but you know, you might want to take a layer off, and it's easier said than done in a mono suit. In the Western application, the best case scenario is to have both pieces, a mono suit and a two-piece. I love the mono suit November through February when you have those really, really deep days.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot beat it. You're not having any snow intrude on you anywhere. You have full seal all around the waist. You're comfortable. You have air moving around you completely. You're not restricted anywhere. You have awesome built-in harnesses around the shoulders. Then the two-piece in the springtime is great because you can hang out. You can take that jacket off. You can shed down a layer. They both are great for season long, no matter what, whichever one you want to go towards. I prefer, if I were to have one go-to, I would probably go with a two-piece all season just for that, the sake of being able to remove a layer easy. And everything has a built-in powder skirt now, which is, you know, an elastic around your waist that you button to seal things up on a jacket from snow getting in. So you can almost mimic a bit of what the mono suit offers, but you still have that, you know, option to shed down layers easy. If you got to get a base layer off or you want to add a base layer, getting your jacket on and off is much easier.
Yeah.
So
awesome. Yeah, great to hear that. You know, a lot of people know they exist and might be seeing in the Midwest, like, hey, what's a mono suit and why do I want one? But good to call out.
For you gals, our mono suit has the drop seat that we came out with last year.
Very cool.
So that's great. The rear zips open so you don't have to take the top off to run to the restroom. I know that's a huge pain in the butt, quite literally.
Yeah.
And so having that option is great. I know a lot of women were shying away from mono suits due to that reason. So we did add that feature in the insulated and non-insulated version of that.
Very cool. Yeah, good considerations also. All right. Well, David, we kind of knocked out quite a bit of content here. Lots to digest and consider. Any last parting thoughts, you know, for that first-time buyer or just anyone who's looking to upgrade their gear?
Yeah, just make sure you really evaluate not what you're doing right now. If you got a 1-2 year plan, you want to head west, you want to travel more, you want gear that's going to last, make sure you really take everything in consideration before pulling the trigger. I know colors can look cool and what your buddy has might look cool, but make sure it works for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's fit and function over anything before pulling the trigger on something that comes in this colorway, but it doesn't really work for your needs. So
yeah.
Just get in there, try stuff on, read the tech side of it, ask somebody at these dealers in the apparel side, you know, ask somebody that works at 509, whatever, and make sure you're making the right decision.
Yeah, definitely. To call out that, you know, if I'm on the website, I have a question, is there a way I can reach out and just say, hey, is this jacket good for me? Can I get some advice?
Definitely. Customer service guys have been there. John, for example, he's been there for going on 10 years, and he knows every product inside and out. I mean, everybody talks about it. I had a great experience with John in customer service. He is a great guy when it comes to any sort of questions. But there's also an FAQ there if you want to speed things up. You just hit under the frequently asked questions, and it is all categorized by what product you're looking at specifically. And most of the time, if it's something you're thinking about, somebody else has as well, and it should be there at your disposal.
Sure. So that makes it a little easier. And, you know, it's always nice to have those tools at our fingertips. Well, David, I think we did a lot of work here, and we'll let the listeners' brains ease off this and kind of wrap it up. I appreciate you stopping by. It's good to have you in Minnesota here. And
yeah, no problem.
Hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me. It's fun to switch it up and quiz myself on a few things here. And yeah, we're looking forward to winter.
Thanks, David, for stopping by the podcast to give us some insight on how to dress properly this snow season. Make sure you check out 509's Fueling Your Passion podcast, hosted by David, which can be found on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Head over to ride509.com to check out the latest 509 gear and to see everything that was mentioned in today's episode. If you enjoyed what you heard today, leave us a 5-star rating and share the episode with your friends. If you're new here, check out our archived episodes for more Polaris snowmobile and off-road content. Look in the description of this episode for links to the Polaris Snowmobile Help Center and Polaris Snowmobile YouTube channel, where you can find more how-to content for your Polaris snowmobile or timber sled. Lastly, if you have questions or ideas for future episodes, submit them to us by using the Contact Us link in the description. Stay tuned for future episodes, and until then, this has been the Polaris Podcast.
Hi, you've reached Joe. Sorry I missed your call. Please leave me your name, your number, and a short message, and I'll get right back to you. Thanks, and have a great day.
Straight to voicemail. Okay, Joe, you need to tell them that the Polaris Help Center is their first stop for vehicle information, maintenance tips, and how-to videos. All they have to do is look for the Help button in the upper right-hand corner of any Polaris brand website. They also need to remember that all riders should always wear helmets, eye protection, and protective clothing and footwear. Read, understand, and follow your owner's manual. Never ride under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and always ride within the limits of your own abilities and never engage in stunt or exhibition driving. Next time, answer your phone. Okay, bye.